Welcome to the Leadership Raccoon podcast, where we overcome barriers to leadership the cunning way. I'm here today with my partner, leadership expert, Mike Mears, and we're going to talk about solving problems with facts, which, wow, that is an interesting concept in today's media world, where all I hear is fake news, and you go to the news, and it's, I don't know about you, Mike, but I don't know what to trust anymore when I'm reading materials, either online or if I'm listening to news. But bringing it back to our world is the importance of making fact-based decisions. And we're going to get into that and talk about how do we collect data, what do we focus on, and how do we fix problems using facts. So let's jump into it, Mike. So one of the first things we talked about making a decision using data or using facts is collection method. You got to be able to collect it and organize it. So when we're starting off, Mike, maybe give some kind of our managers, our project managers, even our small business owners, whoever it may be, they've got a problem. They want to present their case. How do we start? Where do I start?
You know, even before you jump in on collecting the data, it's good to pause for a bit and get together with some other people. Do a little brainstorming on what data would be helpful. Mm. Sometimes you can gather data and it's not actionable. I mean, It just doesn't help you. You're not going to be able to improve anything based on that. But just do kind of a sit back and think about what is the issue. Business goals, you know, obviously things like market share, diversity, numbers of proposals won, new products, all that. If it's a financial issue, your basic costs you can gather. Actual costs, yeah. Profitability.
Customer so satisfaction.
Yeah. Oh, customer satisfaction opens up, like you always say, Likert scales for customer variables. You can do very simple surveys, one, two, three-line surveys, three-question surveys, and you get valid information back. What you get back doesn't have to be statistically valid. It just has to be meaningful as an indicator that something's good or bad, right? Mm-hmm. So don't worry about collecting data, and this has got to be exactly totally randomly selected, right. And it's got to be this and that, so it's statistically valid. It just any indication, any data that you pull together is good because it can be an indicator that you need to do further work or something that does need fixing. And let me just say before we go on, I am so happy to see this is getting traction, the whole concept of fact-based decision-making.
100%.
Sometimes called evidence-based decision-making. And I'm a fan of Jeffrey Pfeffer out at Stanford, who's got really one of the founders in terms of founding people involved in this effort. So he's done a great deal of evidence-based decision-making work. Mm-hmm. And using it for things like the medical profession, where we thought something was one way, but when you really start collecting data and looking at it, oh my goodness, there's a different issue there. Also, they're using it now, applying it to education, starting on that. So it's an exciting field.
Yeah, I think the breakthroughs in technology are really making this. I know in my world, business intelligence was something we kind of talked about, and now it's something we do every day. I mean, it is part of, it's probably, I would say it's taken over workflow automation and knowledge management as core things that we do, and business intelligence is number one. It's so much low-hanging fruit there of, in the past, I would maybe collect data, throw it into a spreadsheet. You have the spreadsheet, and maybe there's one or two people in your office that are really good at Excel, and they got that great pivot table or that nice graph you wanted, right? But there was only a few people that could do that, right? Now, with these tools, ClickView, Tableau, you can take a flat file or take any data input and have a dynamic interface to look at reports, look at trends in hours, minutes. It kind of blows my mind just how far we've come so fast with some of these tools.
But. Well, you know, one reason we have, I've got just bought a book called The Undoing Project by Michael Lewis, who you may recognize. He did Liar's Poker, The Big Short, Moneyball.
Yep.
But this one is on two Israeli psychologists, Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky, who teamed up 40 years ago. And Kahneman, some people may recognize that name. He wrote a book recently called Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow. Mm-hmm. What they've discovered is the brain doesn't quite operate like we think it does. It's not all pure logic. Mm-hmm. There is a huge, huge amount of emotion involved in decision making.
Yes.
And as they got deeper and deeper into this issue, they realized we can lead ourselves astray quite easily. Mm. And so they came up with some theories that had huge impact on Pfeffer and others to start looking at evidence-based or fact-based decision making and management, as opposed to using just raw intuition, because we're quite often wrong.
Yeah, I agree. That is one of the best shifts we've seen in all industries. 7 years ago, gosh, longer than that now, I was working on with a large transportation company, and the project, the whole program was behind, the concept behind it was data-driven decisions. And it was setting up your business to operate that way, which I thought I loved. Back then, I was like, wow, this group gets it. And now I think that's commonplace. I think 10, 15 years ago, maybe a little bit ahead of the curve. Now it's like, okay, if you're not using some type of business intelligence tool, I would say you're behind. If your group, no matter what you do, if you don't have a way to analyze your data quickly and accurately and give you visual representation, probably want to go back and think, okay, what could we be doing? Because these tools are very affordable now. Some of these SaaS-based tools, SaaS being software as a service, where licenses are not, you know, they're doable now. They want to get into all different types of businesses.
Well, that gets us into the visually display your data
question,
right?
That's one of our next
topics. And I know, granted, you've got a lot of great whiz-bang computer programs to do that, but I'm going to take you back over 100 years ago to my favorite visually displayed data.
Okay.
It was a French engineer that made a tableau, or a poster, mm-hmm. of Napoleon's advance and retreat from Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
And Charles Menard was his name. It was 1869. He tracks one bit of data, which is the number of troops involved. So the advance on the map to Moscow is in black, and then the retreat is in a separate color. So that tells you, that's mm-hmm. two bits of data. Another one is the thickness of the line going toward Moscow.
Wow.
Tells you how many troops there were. Tragically, by the time the line got back, more than 97% died.
Wow.
And the reason was you can imagine, you're walking thousands of miles in minus 15 degree weather, and you mm-hmm. got hordes of Russians after you mm. who are armed. But anyway, he captured all this, the temperature, longitude, latitude, numbers of troops, location, the whole thing, in this one two-dimensional visual display of data.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of my favorite, and you can actually Google Napoleon's retreat chart.
We'll add it to the
blog.
It's
interactive. It's interactive. You can actually roll over any point and see all the data. But there you go. More than 100 years ago, an engineer in France was using visual methods to really give you high impact on data.
Mm-hmm. Because without that, I mean, you can have the data in a nice spreadsheet, or let's say a spreadsheet, or it's not a story on the spreadsheet. Maybe you, as the person that's done the data analysis, you're like, it's right there. Don't you see line 5,000? Look, there's a no. But how do you share that with someone that's got a million other things going on in their life?
Absolutely.
You've got 5 minutes of their time, and you think it's really important. Well, I would put the effort into a nice chart.
And that's a tip for the day. Because if you, if any of our listeners want to influence their boss, stop writing 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 page memos, mm-hmm. and think about how could you show that graphically or visually. And I'll give you an example. A CIA director came in. I won't mention his name. He was one of the greats, but I won't mention his name. And I really wanted to sell him on an idea of expanding mm-hmm. training. So what I did is I went to the Department of Defense and figured out how many days of training, leadership training, has a new general had by the time he gets his one star.
Right.
So you just plot through the career path and what's the training, and pull out command and general staff, college, mm-hmm. what's leadership, what's not. And then I did the same thing for new executives at the agency. And I simply made a bar chart of an executive in the private sector, the intelligence community, new executive, and the general grade. And needless to say, the other two were far above the one that we had in-house in terms of numbers of days of training.
Right.
And he made immediate decision to expand the leadership training.
Right.
There you go. One sheet of paper. I could have written a 20-page paper. I could have written a 100-page paper. And that one little bar chart had more impact.
And if you would have written the 20-page paper, he may have glanced at it and asked you to come in and summarize it.
Exactly.
I'm guessing, right?
Right.
And
right.
Even that personal summary is not as powerful as talking to that graph.
Right, exactly.
It really can't understate that. I'd say tip of the year. I mean, you have to think about what you want to accomplish. Doing the data analysis, I mean, so what we talked about so far is, okay, I've got a problem. I'm going to collect the data. I'm going to organize it. I'm going to measure it. I'm going to depict it visually. I'm going to look for trends. All those things work together. If you kind of just take step one and two and think you're done, you're not going to get, most times, you're not going to get the outcome you're looking for. It takes work putting all them together to get your end state, which is what you're working towards.
Absolutely. And I think the icing on the cake is that what we were just talking about, visually display. If you really want to sell something, use a visual display. And boy, does that tell them.
It tells the story. Message.
Yep.
And just one more example before we wrap up on this topic. Last year, every year we submit an end of year report to tell everyone how great we are for our division, right? And the report, I looked at it. Great report. I wasn't involved in it last year. All narrative. Great narratives. I read it. Boom, boom. Look at all this great stuff we're doing. This year I said, okay, let's change this up a little bit. So I took an Excel sheet that we had been using to track our projects. I'm kind of embarrassed we used an Excel sheet, but we're moving past that soon. But we had a big Excel sheet, columns of data, project data related. We took that and put it into ClickView, which is one of these display tools. It took my ClickView developer probably 2 hours to take my spreadsheet into this dynamic front end where I was selecting what I wanted to see. I wanted to see projects by stakeholder. I wanted to see projects by technology. I want to see projects by impact right there. I'm sitting in front of my boss. I'm not showing him a spreadsheet. I'm not showing him a graph. I'm asking him, what do you want to see? Click a button. Oh, you want to dive deeper into that data. You can highlight the data and then pull up the granular data to see it. So that to me is where if you're presenting, you're looking at data, that to me is the ultimate, you know, process.
It's really powerful.
It's just powerful. And I know 5 years ago, I was trying to do stuff like that where I wanted to, and it just took so much time. You still would do it, but you're talking about, hey, these are, you know, 8 o'clock at night trying to get that chart.
Exactly.
Oh, the X-axis won't line up correctly, right? And here I am, and I just sat back and I told the developer, I said, this is amazing. I said, you just took what would have taken me a year to do 5 years ago, and you did it in 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Powerful stuff. Business
Absolutely.
Intelligence, the ability to collect, organize, measure, and share data using the tools, it applies to everything. Our HR group has really glommed onto it, workforce analytics planning, stuff that they wanted to do but had no concept of how to do it. It's as simple as, where's the data? Source the data. Share the data.
Exactly.
Not quite that simple, but theoretically it can be, depending on the size of your organization. So let's kind of move forward, Mike. So we talked about collecting, what to focus on, how to present it, but now we have fixing problems. So we want to fix problems versus assessing blame. So let's say you're an organization and you've done all these things and now you're armed with all this information. I think sometimes, Mike, the reaction of a leader might be, okay, I've looked at this process and the data is telling me that this division over here, they're terrible. They're not getting the job done for this business process. I'm going to go hammer them, right? Slow down. I think too many times our gut reaction is to blame people, not the process, not the supporting. What is going on within that group? Why are they not performing well? I think you'll find things like they didn't know it was a priority. They have other priorities that they're focused on. They get this the lowest priority. There's a lot of these intangibles. And I think if you're armed with this data, you have this, be careful about how you use it.
You know, you're absolutely right. And this goes back a long time. There's a lot of hidden things in the past where some of these issues have been answered. The Human Side of Enterprise by Douglas McGregor was written in the 50s, if you can imagine that. He talked about Theory X, Theory Y. Mm-hmm. Theory X is kind of the old-fashioned way of blame people and beat them with a stick to make them change. His Theory Y was revolutionary, which is, wait a minute, what if we let people use their brains and have clarity, though? What, you know, where are the guidelines and what's the mission? Mm-hmm. What are their goals? But let them go. Mm-hmm. Think about that. That's more than 60 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then you had a guy right after that named Deming who came along and tried to sell his ideas in the United States, couldn't, and that's why he went to Japan, and the Deming method was developed. He said 85% of all problems are process-oriented, not people.
Yep.
So here we are blaming the people for 85% of the problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a resurgence now with Deming's work and mm-hmm. large institutes set up, and there's a lot being done there on the Deming method and tied in with Lean Sigma and all the other stuff we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really an important distinction there, fixing problems and not blame.
Yeah, because, I mean, a person could be doing their best, maybe they're not trained adequately. Maybe they're not motivated at it. There's so many aspects to look at. And I just see it, have seen it so many times where as soon as someone gets a piece of data, it's like, oh, I got the hammer now.
Exactly.
And I just want to say to anyone out there, if you're in that position, think about solving problems before you think about hammering people.
You know, in closing, there's a performance reason for doing this too, not just because I say do it because it's the way you should treat people, but mm-hmm. but there's also a real performance mm-hmm. A reason, and that is that we've talked about social pain in the past, but anytime you blame somebody, you've either embarrassed them, humiliated them, or angered them, and we know that type of social pain basically sticks in the brain longer than the memory of physical pain.
Really?
It does. So think about it. You've blamed somebody for something. Number one, that memory is held longer. They're not going to forget.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the bad part. When that occurs, their logical part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, literally closes down. You can see this on an MRI.
Really?
A functional MRI. The brain closes down. So what have you done? We're in an age where we value knowledge workers. That means their brains. And so what you have just done is you've shut down that brain. You're not going to get innovation. You're not going to get creativity mm-hmm. out of that person again. They're going to be very wary. They're going to be a little fearful of you.
Mm-hmm.
It simply doesn't work.
And we talk about it a lot on this podcast, culture. Because when you have, if you're the type of boss or you're in the type of environment where we're looking for that hammer all the time, you have a culture of fear.
That's right.
And you're not going to have, if you're about innovation, if you're about creativity, you can forget about those things. You're not even getting close to that.
Mm-hmm.
You have a culture of fear, meaning people are going to do the minimum they have to do to get by and get the job done.
They'll do specifically what they're told to do out of fear. Yeah. So fear can be a motivator, but what happens is you've just closed off all creative alternatives. They're not going to get better. They're not going to experiment on the job.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to do what you told them to do. Yeah.
And I think in both of our opinions, that's not where we want the organization to go. I think especially the way that technology, the way things are going, you have all these great tools. You want people to be able to use their creativity, use their knowledge to build your business, to improve your organization, whether it's federal, public, private. You want a culture of, okay, I feel like if I make this decision, I'm not going to be blamed for making a decision based on the information I have. We have to be careful about that.
So, you know, you're right. And in closing, I mean, yeah. That's why you want to focus on the fixed problems and not the blame. The blame is the people side negatively, but the fixing problems, that's fun. That's stress-free because you're focused on an issue mm-hmm. and the human brain craves solving puzzles, basically, and improving things and fixing things and finding answers. We all crave that. It's a basic human drive. So the fixing problems thing can be a very powerful motivator. And we know some work Teresa Amabile did at Harvard Business School on what motivates employees. She sent thousands of little worksheets out to employees, and they filled in what they were doing every 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And she discovered that when they were really motivated was when they had just done something small that moved the organization or their job forward. Mm. Small solution to a small problem, no matter how small, it was really, you get that pop of dopamine and you're ready to roll. Great. So isn't it interesting? You're back to theory X, Y, it's fix the problems and don't hammer the people.
Right. So those a few tips for your manager, your leadership toolkit. A lot more to find on the Leadership Raccoon. Check us out on Twitter. Check out our website. A lot of information, tools, templates, ideas to help you become a better leader.